Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Look, guys, let's try to find some common ground here, huh?
Forget it, Walsh. You're either with us or you're in the enemy camp.
You can't throw bouquets to both sides.
Or any.
What?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 6, Homecoming. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
I have some site business up top, just because we haven't mentioned it in a while. You can purchase an ad on this podcast. It's $50 for a personal message, $100 for a commercial message. Go to previously.tv/ads. You can supply us with copy. We can write some stupid thing. Whatever you like, hit us up there. You can also buy shirts inspired by this podcast at glarkware.com, including Mad, Bad, and Dangerous to Know, Don't Be Such a Squeef, and The Blaze. A lot of parents read it, all variously available in multiple colors. And since we haven't mentioned this in an even longer time, you can help us out by giving us a review on iTunes. It helps us in the rankings and makes it easier for other people to find us. So if you like the podcast, give us a nice review. Sarah.
Yes.
Shall we proceed?
Yes.
Okay.
Indeed. Let us dip a toe in the tepid water of Andrea's stupid marriage, which is our C story.
Indeed. Okay. So Andrea comes out from putting Hannah down for a nap and tries to get amorous with Jesse. Barf, but Jesse wanted to use the quiet to study. Andrea gets pissed that he can turn it on for the broads at work, but not for her. And apparently they've been fighting about this since we last saw them. And Jesse answers her concerns heteronormatively in clip number 2.
Look, I've told you a million times, a good bartender always flirts with the women customers a little.
Right, so you can end up with more cash in your pocket when you get home. I've heard that before, okay?
But that's just the way it is, okay?
No, it's not okay. It's seedy.
Oh, come on. It's not like anything goes on with these women. You know it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, it does. It means that we hardly have any time together. And then when we do, all you want to do is study.
Look, I have to study. Look, we're both really busy right now, all right? It's just bad timing.
Jesse, I'm worried about us.
Don't be. We're okay. We're okay.
It's almost...
Hold on another 18 years, and then we'll have enough time for you to realize that I suck.
Yeah. It's almost like you shouldn't marry someone you barely know just because you get pregnant. I one might say.
You could. That is an argument.
Yeah. Also, if
that I've made at the top of my lungs before, so I'll just leave it out this time. Also, him.
Also, if I were in a relationship with someone who was mostly financing the household and that person was in a service job and they didn't flirt with fucking everybody, I would be pissed. That's how you get tips. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, look, the shit works. Also, it's Los Angeles. Every other bartender is an actor.
Right.
You got to bring it.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Andrea goes from there to several days later, the laundromat, and she's trying to get a change machine to take her dollar, and it won't. But some howdy doody looking motherfucker is reading a book with his foot rudely blocking an aisle. And since he just put in his last load, as it were, he says he will break a dollar for her and then refuses to take the bill. He's also pre-med. Seeing the baby, he assumes that Andrea is babysitting and not that she is, for example, the child's grandmother. But she doesn't correct him either way. And Hannah's much more dubious of this Ginge than she was of Jim in the last episode, it must be noticed. Ginge's name is Peter, and generically flirty chat ensues. And then Andrea's bringing the baby and her laundry home to find Jesse waiting with candles lit and wine ready to pour. And for some reason, now she's pissed that he's not at work, but he wins her over pukefully in clip number 3.
Aren't you supposed to be mixing gin and tonic at Doheny's?
And making eyes the female clientele.
Right.
Well, I had the overwhelming urge to stay home tonight and make eyes at you instead.
So you're playing hooky?
Yep. And you are going to play with me.
Ew.
Let me just put this little lady to bed. Come on. Let's go sweetie. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then the real fun begins.
Look, I think Andrea just wanted to get in a hot bath and Jill off while thinking about Peter, and I think he's kind of cute. I don't blame her. It's better than Jesse. Mm-hmm. Who, well, Peter, yes. I forget the actor's name, but his uncle is my mother's hairdresser. Hey, oh, 2 degrees of laundry ginge. Yay.
But, play.
Oh, Jesse.
I'm twice as gay after this scene as I was when Val made me gay the last time.
And you're still not as gay as anyway. Jesse.
Nope. So when Jesse goes to put Hannah to bed, and Andrea pulls Peter's number out of her pocket and tosses it in the trash, even though there's a candle right there, but she doesn't burn it, even though that would be muy dramatico. And that is the end of this story.
Thank God.
Right? Moving
Unfortunately.
On to our B plot. B plot, some bullshit with a rival mascot and some other doomed couples. My first note in this one is, this is so stupid. School spirit is dumb, but we start here at Southern California University. Kelly and Donna come out of the bookstore dragging this school for having gold as one of its colors. So in case you couldn't tell, it's USC. They bring their booty to awaiting Steve and Griffin. Donna is so stupid she wore a CU pin on their covert mission. What's that, you'd say? You'd like some exposition about that? What that mission is? Don't mind if I do, says Steve in clip number 4.
Can't we just make like a big float and call it a day?
Hey, you volunteered for the Greek homecoming committee. Stealing the SU mascot comes with the territory.
So how many times has it been stolen?
Once. 30 years ago, my dad and some of his keg brothers pulled this off. And it is definitely time for history to repeat itself.
I hate it already.
And it's a giant bear.
Yes.
And it doesn't shit in
which
the woods.
Which they're trying to throw...
Whatever.
They try to throw us off the scent of like which school is which in this fake universe by making SCU's mascot a grizzly, which is more like the UCLA mascot, the Bruin, even though I thought we'd all agreed that CU was UCLA. But anyway, this thing is enormous. And it makes me regret once again, just as a sidebar, that I didn't acquire a taxidermied grizzly bear when I lived in Southern California, which was one of my goals at the time. Did not occur. Maybe someday. Everyone is daunted, but all they're doing now is scouting the area, which is guarded by a couple of dudes. Steve is the one who's expected to come up with a plan, so good luck, everybody. And later, the idiots are at the Peach Pit scheming about the stunt when Val comes in. She has a story from SUNY Buffalo about a similar plan that worked, although she says it could be cruel. Everyone's okay with that. Now Kelly's suddenly cooled Val per Brandon's orders from the last episode, I guess. And then Don is working on a promo for the admissions office because who better than someone who started working on video 10 minutes ago? When in comes Ray, he flirts with her hard. She's flattered but noncommittal. He came to say goodbye because his job on campus is done. She's not ready to lose touch with him, and he asks for her number. She demurs when he asks. She admits that she already has a boyfriend. He asks how serious it is, and she smiles so that she can mix her signals and say she doesn't know yet. So he asks for her number again, squinting in a way that he mistakenly thinks is sexy, which you can see in the visual aids. But apparently it works. And then Val has just come out of the shower at Dylan's and is asking where the Jim and Cindy would lose it if she didn't come home, though they both know the answer. When she mocks their Midwestern wholesomeness, Dylan asks what happened to her, and she tells him about the mascot caper and then gives him an upside-down Spider-Man kiss. She doesn't want to shatter the Walsh's image of her yet, but clip number 5.
Same time, same station tomorrow?
I don't know. It's not getting a rut here, okay?
No rut.
Nothing but rut.
Neither of us want anything heavy here, Dylan.
Yeah, well, just so long as we remember that.
Got burned out on the real thing, huh?
I'm just taking a breather.
You were really in love with Brenda, weren't you?
It was a long time ago.
And Kelly?
What is this, 20 questions?
I just want to know who you loved more. The blonde or the brunette.
Why, you thinking of dyeing your hair?
Maybe.
Look, don't go falling in love here, okay?
I'm not looking for love.
Good. Because things are getting too cozy between us as it is. You already know more about me than you should.
I don't know why it's such a big secret that you lost your money.
Well, you don't have to know. It's my business. That's why I want to keep it, all right?
Okay. I'll take it to the grave.
You better.
Whose grave?
Gee, I wonder if Al's going to tell anyone someday.
Murph.
Moving on. Part of Val's plan from SUNY Buffalo involves brownies that don't get overcooked. Tantalized yet? Donna tells Kelly that she made a date with Ray for the next night. Kelly reminds her that they're supposed to be stealing a mascot with your boyfriend that night. Donna promises that she'll be there and asks Kelly to cover for her. Kelly is titillated by how naughty Donna's being, but also when she finds out that Ray is surprising Donna with their date itinerary, she is wary. In clip number 6.
Donna, this guy could be a mass murderer for all you know.
So could Griffin. So could anyone. What? Like, this is the chance you take when you date, is it not?
Yeah, what? I don't, but this is all just to set up a bunch of pumpkin stuff, so let's get to it.
Of course. Indeed. Donna protests that Ray is not a stranger. I mean, he is, kind of. She cites all the locations where she's seen him as if that means anything, and then says she trusts him. Kelly's all famous last words. We get it, Kelly, you read ahead. And then Donna and Ray are on their date in clip number 7.
I think it's ready for MTV.
Okay, you couldn't even get the rights to this boner shitty song that we have to just have him asking her for a compliment on a song we did not hear. Okay,
oh,
whatever.
My God. Yeah, we should start counting these and like have a little bet to see how many of them there are by the end of the season.
We should. Okay, I will start counting.
You
with the
were
next
great.
One.
Like, what? You're just walking. You're great at walking.
Donna says it is ready for MTV, whatever it is. And Ray gives her the tape to put back in the glove compartment, which she hilariously finds is already quite full of a fucking Bowie knife. I made a gif of this because this knife is so big. Ridiculous. Donna is horrified, but doesn't say anything like, what's with this knife, before closing the glove compartment back up. But obviously, this plus Kelly's warning are making her apprehensive, and she asks him where they're going in clip number 8.
So where are we going?
That's a surprise. In fact, why don't you close your eyes?
And then she does. Like, as if he could see her out of the corner of his squint eyes.
And also, read a room, Ray. Like, you have a giant knife in there. Also, that's totally the wrong knife for pumpkin carving.
Thank you. Yes. A second later, they pull into a dirt lot next to Pruitt Family Pumpkins, and they're helping out his Aunt Marie during selling season. Fun date, Ray. That's not... And then he adds, as Sarah said, clip number 9.
Can't carve a pumpkin without a good knife.
And he holds it up in front of his eye. It's a knife for field dressing a fucking deer, not carving a pumpkin. It's so big.
Yeah. There's only really one use for that knife, and it's mass murdering. So, yeah. Come on, Ray. Yes.
Good luck, Donna. So later we learn that Donna is a pumpkin expert from way back. Okay. We also learn that there's a petting zoo, so Ray's read on what mental 6-year-old Donna would want to do on a date was actually pretty insightful. She wants to go since it's getting late, but there are newborn goats to be fed, so she
and
lets herself.
And I am fine back with that because they're so cute.
So cute. We'll come back to those in a second. Right now, we have to go back to the caper, where Griffin, Kelly, Val, and Steve are all ready to put the plan into action, except for Donna's absence. Kelly half-assedly covers for her. Steve wants to just go ahead without her, which is fine. It's not like it needs 3 bimbets. Anyway, Kelly and Val think they can handle it themselves. Munce reaches for a brownie, but duh, they're laced with laxatives. Caper time. Val and Kelly are in their SCU drag. Val's jeans are unbuttoned again, but at least this time there's a reason. So they bring guys to, they bring brownies to the guys guarding the bear. These two boneheads, whose only purpose here is to head off mascot mischief, have no issue taking unwrapped food from these strangers who refuse to try them themselves. One guy pokes holes in the girls' claim that they came from an alpha meeting, at which Val smoothly pivots to say they baked the brownies for the meeting they thought they had tonight, so they're second having brownies. They'll be hurt if the guys don't have one. Say what you will about TV these days, but no show even for teenagers would expect them to watch this sorry excuse for a scheme like it made logical sense, because it doesn't. Back to the pumpkin patch. Darkness has fallen, and Ray finds Donna cradling an adorable baby goat in her arms. I made a gif. You can see in the visual aids at previously.
Yes, there will also be a gif of the little goat like bouncing off the top of the big goat in the pen.
I thought it was on a pig.
It, who cares? Way, doesn't yes. matter. It was cute. You will be looking at it. You're
super
welcome.
Super cute. Donna doesn't want to leave. Ray says she can stay as long as she wants. And she asks what happens after Halloween. The next rest is Christmas. Then there's craft fairs and swap meets. Nothing fancy. Donna says fancy's overrated. He realizes he made her late for whatever she had planned. She thinks she missed it altogether. But she's not sorry she did. They kiss. They have no chemistry. Back at SUC, the guys have diarrhea. That came on real fast. Munt secures the bathroom door, and Griffin and Steve roll out to wheel the bear away. Wow, that was easy. Then back with Donna and Ray, he flirtfully brings her home. She's opening her door when he says he's not going to call her again, but only because he's going to wait to hear from her this time, and gives her his number, which he's pre-written like a dork. In the kids' bathroom at the Walsh house, Cindy finds Val, who, while she touches up her makeup, says she's going out to celebrate with Steve. Cindy says she thought he just left, and Val smoothly lies she had to get back to the frat house, and could she have the car keys to go meet him? Oh, of course she can, but she's not going to meet Steve. She goes to Dylan. He opens the door with his shirt open, a red flag she doesn't notice, and they have this exchange in clip number 10.
Same time, same station.
Yeah, I can't do it tonight.
What do you mean?
Tonight's no good.
Well, I don't get it.
Well, you're a smart girl, Val. Figure it out.
Who is she?
Nobody you'd know. Gosh, nobody I know, really.
Good line.
Thanks a lot, Dylan.
Look, don't start that with me, all right? It's not like we're a steady thing, remember?
And you don't let me forget it for a second.
Oh, no. Dylan has a different trait.
Yeah, I hate that they do this to Valerie, too. That she's all like, really? Him?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah.
You could have anyone. You could have everyone. You should steal that girl off him, but don't care about him. Ugh. TV. Yep. Boo.
The next day in the good old student union, Steve proudly unveils Bruno the Bear. It's very King Kong displayed on stage at Broadway anyway. Griffin missed Donna last night. She lies that she missed him too. And Kelly tells Val she's making her an honorary alpha member. So I guess the fake sorority broke up in Brenda's absence. Moving on to our A story. Oh, good. Brandon's going to take a stand on human rights.
He's going to take forever to do it. And he's going to be a twunt about it. Great.
Oh, yes. Yes, he is.
Sorry, a what?
A twunt. How is it possible that you live in this house and have never heard that before?
Well, wait, is that an actual thing that means something?
Yeah, you know what it means.
No, I don't.
Well, it's a combination of two words, you know.
That we call Brandon all the time.
All right.
Twat and another word.
Yeah, I guess, but
okay. It starts with CU.
I don't know. Yeah, I know, but it feels like, I don't know, those are like the same thing.
Right.
It's like, oh, it's black and it's, you know,
yeah,
midnight. It's
twunt and twat.
Night. Like, blood night. What?
Twunt and twat have very different meanings, even though they're technically about the same thing.
Yeah,
it's a matter of shading.
Hey, it sounds like a fun word.
Well, get used to it because we got a lot of random
left. Put it on a shirt, same many people buy it. Would you like to buy a shirt, walk around town in a twunt shirt? Let me know. Hello at clarkhorror.com.
I bet people do. Anyway,
All my shirts are torn shirts.
A Southeast.
Once.
A Southeast.
Once. Three times a shirt.
Are you done?
Nope. Twice.
I just don't want to start talking a fifth time and have you interrupt me. Are you done?
Maybe.
A Southeast Asian gardener looks alarmed by a motorcade. Brandon manages to look like a fucking asshole, even just showing ID to what appears to be a Secret Service agent. And you can see him looking like a cock doing that in a GIF I made in the visual aids. And then a bald guy is let out of his town car and goes into a house where he's greeted by a very effusive chancellor. This guy is President Quintero, and evidently of Selenesia, a not real country. And evidently he and Chancellor go way back. Even Claire knows him. The two of them clearly love each other. Claire brings Brandon out to meet Quintero. The chancellor introduces Brandon as Claire's boyfriend, as well as the school president. No one corrects him on either point. And left alone, Brandon asks Claire about the chancellor's misapprehension of their relationship, and Claire shrugs that she can't help it if Chancellor lives in a fantasy world. Exposition about how the chancellor and Quintero got to be bros? Don't mind if I do, says Claire. Clip 11.
Yeah, they met at Wharton. Actually, he introduced my mom and dad.
No wonder it's such a happy reunion.
Well, it's not exactly. Can you keep a secret?
No.
Sure.
Nando's here for treatment at CU Medical Center. He has liver cancer.
What a twunt.
I was about to say he actually does keep the secret, but then I remembered he doesn't. He tells it to everybody. Yeah. And then... Brandon's letting people into his office and saying they're his first visitors, so I guess the legal challenge we were supposed to care about got settled off screen and unmentioned.
I mean,
cool.
Not that I'm complaining, but do you get the feeling that like Jamie Walters was playing a song in the foreground when this happened and they're like, eh, just cut it, who cares?
Yes. These people are Kay and Ben.
Kay.
She was a friend of Josh's and canvassed Kay.
No,
and Ben.
I know, just no one is fucking named Kay.
Kay.
Who's our age.
No, that's true. Not in the 90s, for sure.
And then Brandon says, don't ask me about my business, Kay. Oh my God, I hate the storyline. I'm sorry. I will stop interrupting for now.
It's okay. You're allowed.
It's okay when Sarah does it.
She's a host. You're just dicking around. Are you not digging around?
We are gay and straight together.
Kay was a friend of Josh's and canvassed for Josh and Brandon during the campaign. That was time wasted. Anyway, who are they and why are they here? Clip 12.
We're the co-chairs of the CU chapter of Human Rights International.
Josh was on our executive board.
Yeah, I remember. What can I do for you guys?
Well, it's going around that the president of Selenesia is here on campus.
Ferdinand Quintero. I met him this morning.
You actually pressed flesh with the butcher, huh?
The butcher?
Brandon, did you know that last year there were over 450 incidents of torture in his country?
That's right. Whippings, beatings, government sanctioned.
And you're saying Quintero knows about this?
Quintero orders it. This guy is a murderer.
He shouldn't be on our campus. He's an enemy to the people.
Look, guys, he's not here on a political visit. He's here as Chancellor Arnold's personal guest.
Well, we're going to make his visit as unpleasant as possible. Now, are you, as our student body president, with us or not?
Listen... And admittedly, I don't know that much about the state of affairs in Selenesia, but I just met this guy. He seems like a normal person.
Your ignorance is showing, Walsh.
Brandon, we know what we're talking about. We wouldn't be here otherwise.
You're wasting your breath, Kay. You remember what Alex Diaz said about this guy? You really are the Chancellor's lackey, aren't you?
Ooh. Also, isn't Brandon a poli-sci major? Like, shouldn't he have heard about this ever?
Also, show, do not make the other people in the scene so sophomorically hateful and smug that I kind of sympathize with Brandon. That's unacceptable. I will be protesting
also,
at your
read
offices.
A fucking paper, Brandon.
Please read the latest report on Serenesia.
But instead of reading a paper, Brandon just reaches out to the smartest person he knows. Unfortunately for him, she is not objective in clip 13.
Claire, tell me something. What do you know about torture going on in Quintero's country?
Torture? Brandon, that's absurd.
It's not what Human Rights International says.
Yeah, well, that group's been all over Nana right from the beginning.
So you have heard of this?
Yeah, but there's no truth to it.
How do you know?
Because, Brandon, I've been there. My father worked with Nando on the reforms. I practically watched them install democracy in that country. Besides, do you really think my father's going to be friends with a butcher?
I wouldn't think so.
Now, a baker and the candlestick maker, maybe, but butcher? No way.
What? I feel so angry that Claire has to be on this side of the story. I mean, I gather that the idea is people be complicated, but she's supposed to be smart, and that's all dumb things to say.
And like vintage, whatever, 1820s things to say, like the baker, the candlestick maker.
At this reception that the chancellor is throwing, Quintero is being very unbutcher-like when a security guard comes to tell him there's a demonstration outside and they want Quintero to go upstairs. He jokes that a protest of just 12 people must mean he's losing his edge. The chancellor apologizes, but the Quintero says he's getting tired anyway. By the way, these are the protesters. Clip 14.
Quintero kills! Quintero kills! Quintero kills!
Guys, come on. You had time to come up with something better than that.
Quintero graduates.
Quintero, what a twunt.
Quintuanto?
More like Twantero.
Tara wins.
Bran is confused. Later, Brandon and Claire end up at the good old student union where Claire bitches about the protesters ruining Quintero's first night. Just then, they spot Kay and Ben, and they have this confrontation in clip 15.
President Walsh, we meet again.
Gilbert and Sullivan, that was quite a show you put on tonight.
You should have been there. Josh would have been there.
Actually, I was there. I was inside.
Now, why doesn't that surprise me?
I was there, too, and you people are completely wrong about Quintero.
Oh, yeah? Why don't you read our latest report on Indonesia? Then come tell me how wrong we are about him.
Stick it in
a
blog.
Just because it's in print, that makes it true. You know, for your information, Quintero is the best leader Selenasia's ever had.
Oh,
maybe we can all agree on how this pretend country's name is pronounced. Thanks.
I mean, we could, but someone would have to care. And I don't. Do you? Okay.
True. No. After Claire has stomped off, Bran mealy-mouths about finding a common ground, which Kay says is impossible. Brandon says he'll read their little pamphlet. Guess that makes it just the right size for you, Dick. But that he would like more proof of what they're alleging. And Kay says she will get it. And then Brandon is actually doing research when he runs into the other smartest person he knows, and we hear their exchange in clip 16.
Human Rights International, what do you think of them?
I think they're excellent.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
They sure have some damning things to say about Selenasia. Listen to this. Citizens report the following as routine police interrogation methods. Whipping with rattan canes, burning flesh with cigarettes, the use of electric shocks to parts of the body you really don't need to hear about.
It's disgusting.
Yeah. Claire swears it's all fabricated.
Well, personally, I take whatever they say pretty seriously. I mean, they don't have anything on their agenda outside of protecting life.
Yeah. Like, how Brandon couldn't figure this out himself is ridiculous, but then...
Also, what is with the... I think they're excellent. It's not a new fucking seafood joint on La Cienega.
Delicious.
Oh,
cumin.
Yeah, Quintero tacos. They're excellent. Shut up, Andrea.
Try the twin.
Speaking of people with agendas, Quintero's in Chancellor's kitchen cooking while Claire keeps him company. There is nice talk about her dead mom and how much Claire must remind the Chancellor of her. And then the lead guard comes in to announce Brandon. Quintero wants to know what he finds most difficult about being president, as if he cares. Brandon says it's not being able to please everyone. And Quintero says he lives with that every day, but it still hurts. And that's Brandon's cue to start tuning up the brazophone in clip 17.
Didn't seem to bother you last night with the demonstration and all.
Brandon?
Shut up.
A good leader must have a thick skin.
I'll remember that.
There is a saying, you can't take the heat. Stay out of the kitchen.
Whoa, what? It's so smart. I totally get
Especially
it now.
Especially since they're in a kitchen. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Cooking up some twin tacos, the national dish of Selenasia.
extra soy sauce. Kay has her proof. It's a guy named Man Yodo. It's that gardener from the beginning of the episode. Brandon pretends to recognize him from around campus. Kay brings Man into Brandon's office, and a sad narration ensues in clip 18.
You said you needed proof. Mon is from Selenesia. His brother edited a newspaper there, wrote some critical stuff about the government. Quintero wanted to have him shut up.
Is this true?
Mon was grabbed by the police when he was at the market and ordered to say his brother planted a bomb in a government building. When he refused, they tortured him.
Wait a second. Whose story is this? Can he speak for himself?
It's okay. You can trust him.
What?
They question me every day. When I wouldn't cooperate, they beat me over and over again. After a week, I couldn't stand it anymore. I signed a statement against my brother. We found him by the side of the road, shot in the head.
I can't believe it.
Show him on.
So he undoes his shirt and he shows Brandon all the scars on his back. They are gnarly, but also kind of fake looking.
Quintero himself ordered this done. Now, are you ready to help us?
Don't ask me about my business, Kay.
What do you want me to do?
Kill yourself. Same as always.
His witnessing evidence of torture face, by the way, is the same as all his other concern faces. Like, oh, I might have to drop out of school. What? Same eyebrows. Like, it's just his one.
Yeah, which
face.
Is also the same as has a pomegranate seed hull trapped between two molars face.
Yeah, but why they had to go through this like show for him when there were reports that he could have just read
and chosen
like,
to believe or not, or pointed out that nobody gives even a shaving of a fuck what the president of a student government thinks about the fictional
right.
kingdom of Selenesia or whatever the fuck. Shut up, Kay.
But it works, and then Brandon is bringing Jim and Cindy up to speed on his current moral quandary in clip 19.
For Ferdinand Quintero.
What are you doing with this?
Human Rights International has filed a civil suit against him on behalf of this gardener at the school. This will keep him in the U.S. to face the charges.
Well, good. Let the court sort it out.
Yeah, but there's a problem. Quintero's security won't let anyone near enough to serve the paper.
So what has this got to do with you?
They want me to serve it. They know I have access. They know he trusts me.
Brandon, this goes way beyond helping out some campus political group. We're talking about a head of state here.
I know, Dad, but I've seen the scars on this guy. They're real.
Honey, I just don't think you should get yourself mixed up in this for your own security.
Tell me about it. Quintero's got some pretty hardcore bodyguards.
You don't have to do this.
I know I don't have to do it, Dad, but if I don't do it, then I really am the Chancellor's lackey.
Brandon, this is crazy. You're just a student.
And who do you think was standing in front of the tanks in Tiananmen Square, Mom? Who toppled the Berlin Wall? Students, just like me.
Taller, though, probably.
Just like you.
Sounds to me like you've already made up your mind.
Yeah. I guess I have.
That was Jim saying it sounded like Brandon had made up his mind that we were heckling over. Shut up, Brandon!
Oh,
shut your face forever!
And my favorite is that... I know this is just so that we can see it, but when he does his giant dong walk into the chancellor house, you can see the subpoena mm-hmm. sticking up out of his back pocket like it's a cruising kerchief.
Yes.
Like... Guys, we can assume he has the subpoena yeah. on his person. Settle down.
Right. Also, is that even a thing? Like, could they not file this with one of his people? Like, are you really telling me that in all of the 5,000 times that Donald Trump has been sued, like, a person got near enough to him to hand him a piece of paper? Like, maybe it is, but I didn't think it was.
Well, and if it's not a citizen, I mean, I don't know, and who cares? The best part of this story, frankly,
right.
is that Brandon ends up basically being too much of a pussy and Quintero has to like serve himself the subpoena, but we're about to hear that, yeah. I assume, in our next clip.
We are. Soon, David asks Claire when he gets to come to a reception with world leaders, and she absolutely puts him off, but it seems like he actually does want to meet her dad, noting that Brandon's met him enough times, and Claire is pleased that he wants to go. Enter Brandon, wanting to talk to Claire in private. And on the deck, she can't believe what he intends to do to a cancer patient. Brandon says he has to, and that if she had met Bon Yodo, she would understand. And instead of addressing that at all, Claire seems to think it should matter to Brandon that Quintero is one of the Arnold's closest family friends. Like, he's not actually your boyfriend, Claire. But Brandon says it does matter. That's why he's there talking to her. And Claire says if he serves a subpoena, she'll never speak to him again. Brandon guesses they won't be speaking then.
Hey, why make that dependent on a subpoena? Just stop talking to him now. He sucks.
Seriously. Word. Brandon then brays up to the chancellor's house. The guard tells them that the chancellor's expecting him. Brandon then brays on into the dining room where the chancellor tells him he shouldn't have involved Claire. She told the chancellor that Brandon was coming. And then the chancellor gets paternal in clip 20.
I'm disappointed in you.
Aren't we all?
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, sir, but how do you explain being friends with a murderer?
Oh, Brandon, it's not that simple. When Quintero asked me to head up the economic reform in his country, I knew that he was offering me the power to improve the lives of literally millions of people.
But at what cost? How many people were killed in the process?
Believe me, I asked myself all the hard questions, and I chose to compromise out of what I've got to believe was a bigger cause.
Excuse me. What my good old friend is trying to say is...
Shut up.
That is the price you pay for democracy. With all due respect, sir, your country is not a democracy. When my country is as old as yours, then we will see how history judges us. But until then, President Walsh, I understand you have something for me.
Pussy.
Brandon cannot even meet his eye as he gives him the papers.
Thank you. That wasn't so hard, was it?
I'm sorry.
Don't be. You did what you had to do. Just like I did. And you'll see, there's always a price.
This is so
also,
stupid.
You didn't even do anything. Like... And I almost thought, like, based on his body language, this will be in the visual aids, but, like, the way he's facing away from Quintero and holding the thing up, I thought he was going to do the psych and, like, jerk it away from him. Because it's just the face he's making because Twunt. God, this is the worst. Yeah. Worst.
It is. And also, like, don't raise these actually complex issues that are real in real countries on this show that is not even going to try to engage with them. Like, this is just wasting everybody's time. Anyway, the next day, Cindy's watching the news when the anchor is saying that Quintero will resign his post, citing his liver cancer. There's nothing about the subpoena, Brandon notes. So he can watch and understand news. Good to know. Brandon says he thinks Quintero assumes he'll die before a trial is ever convened. So I guess he actually didn't tell anyone about his liver cancer. That came out on the news. Sorry, Brandon. You did keep a secret for fucking once.
Only because he didn't tell
then
Kelly.
David is bringing Claire.
She would have fucking told everybody.
Seriously. David brings brings Claire to this bear unveiling where Brandon is a cock in clip 21.
Hi.
I'm sorry. Did you just say something to me?
Yeah, come here.
Well, if Nando's still talking to my dad after he let you in, I guess I can still talk to you, too.
I can't say I'm sorry.
Well, my dad taught me something about separating friendship from politics.
Yeah, me too.
Cop-out alert.
Weak.
So who was right and who was wrong? We'll never know. I guess it doesn't matter.
Selenesia sank it to the sea. Everyone is trooping out. We never saw it again.
Everyone's trooping out to the big homecoming game, which, by the way, Steve interrupts this conversation between Claire and Brandon about this person who might be like condoning multiple murder and torture in his country by being like, hey, you're going to miss the game talking about politics. Shut up, Steve. But off they go, except Brandon then sees Mon and goes over to get his ego stroked. Ugh. In our final clip.
Hey, how you doing?
Better than I have been in a long time. You're a brave boy, Brandon. Just like my brother was. Thank you for everything.
Take care.
Oh, Jesus.
I had to.
I mean, this is torture. Who do I sue for this? Fucking worst.
Me. The final thank you, white savior moment is really like the cherry on the shit sundae that is the storyline. So I'm happy it's over. Let's wrap things up with our most valuable player of the episode. Kay, she actually got something done.
The bear.
It is cute.
It is.
All right, least valuable player. God, I mean, Brandon is obvious, but I also want to give an honorable or dishonorable mention to Claire for defending someone on very sketchy evidence, and also the Chancellor for being like, well, people might be getting tortured, but I was just there to work on the economy. Like, guys, you're kind of complicit in what sounds like a pretty terrible system, so not okay.
I'm fine with all of those. I am going to go with the writers who sold out Val and made her, like, stereotypical lady who gets attached instead of a boss bitch. Weak.
Yeah.
And
I agree.
Him.
Let's, yeah, let's conclude with the Moo Moo Parker challenge. 5 ways from this episode Brandon might have ended up dead. Oh, I wish we could have seen him killed by Quintero security guards, but alas, that disorder.
Bear tips over, pinning him beneath.
Poisoned by the stir fry the butcher made.
Stress eats an entire plate of those brownies and craps himself to death.
And could have been brainwashed by Mugatu to kill the...
Oh, yes. The Prime Minister of Celanesia. He really was taking crazy pills.
Oh. Beautiful. That makes 5.
Oh, next time on Again With This, Donna finds out Griffin's a sleaze, Steve finds out Val's boning Dylan, and everyone finds out Dylan's broke. You're going to find out that our visual aids are busted, and you can find those on our website at previously.tv. You can also follow us on Twitter at previouslytv. I'm Sarah D. Bunting, and I do the gardening around here. On Twitter, I'm at Tomato Nation. Tara Ariano can compete with Sort Of, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And brave boy David T. Cole is our producer. He's on Instagram at Clark. Talk to you next time.
Oh, thanks. I didn't think I was going to get anything in the intro because you two are hosts and I'm just a guy who dicks around.
Don't be a twunt.
Hi. You know what to do after the beeparoni.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.